Other day we were on a plane, this was a year ago or so, but we were on a plane and the turbulence started to be really bad. And so my teammates turned to me and said, hey, Cuff, you got your angel suit on? I had to pull up my garments to show them, like, hey, don't worry. And they're like, okay, we're safe.
Forget for the lead. Yes. Forget for the three. Bullseye. What a shot by Forget.
This is From the Logo with Jimmer Fredette, presented by Eddie. Happy people make for a happy business. And now, your hosts, Spencer Linton and Jimmer Fredette.
Thumbs up, let's do this. I am Spencer Linton, he is Jimmer Fredette, and this is From the Logo, presented by Eddie, the HR software with a soul. Great to have all of you with us for our deep range conversations about life inside and well beyond the world of sports. Speaking of, Jimmer, how is life, my friend?
Man, life is great. It's really good. Just enjoying life. Kids are doing great. And we've just had such a great time with this pod so far. The last three episodes we've had have just been awesome. We appreciate all of you that have subscribed and are listening to the pod. We've had unbelievable response. And it's because of you guys we are able to do something like this. So, Spence, it's a good day.
Absolutely. And for those of you who might be listening for the first time, I know that the subscribers already know this is the drill, but we'll remind you once again, this podcast is meant to uplift, educate, and maybe most importantly, entertain. We just want you to have a good time with an array of topics, including current events, Jimmer's life, my life, our featured guests' lives. On topic are things like physical and mental health, spirituality, faith, sport, and family. We want all of you to feel better after hanging out with us and our all-star guests, I should say. And today marks episode 4, Jimmer, as you pointed out, which at this point should qualify you as a podcast veteran, should it not?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm perfect at this. Amazing. There's nothing, no notes or anything. And just going into this freehand, it's we have a lot to work on, but it has been a really fun time, and it's been really fun to just see the response that we've gotten, right? Like the comments, the social media posts, all the things that people, you know, have said to us. It's just been so refreshing for us to hear, because we want to just make it fun. We want to have people learn some things. We want to have great guests on. And the response has been so good. It just makes me want to continue to do it with you, Spence, which is a good thing.
Let's roll. Hey, we're in a rhythm. You're a rhythm shooter, right?
Yep.
We can appreciate that. We're going, man.
And I'm a shooter anytime. Like, I don't need rhythm to shoot. Come on now, but I need rhythm for this, that's for sure.
He still doesn't need to touch the rim, everyone, okay? We are ready for the opening tip-off. Here is our starting lineup today, including a guest that we're really excited about. He is truly like Mighty Mouse, undersized, and so many people undervalued him, but he has made his way all the way to the NFL and has appeared in 2 different Super Bowls. He's won one of the most dynamic return specialists I've ever seen. He still might be the greatest high school football player I've ever seen, Jimmer. Britton Covey is on the program. And as good as he is at football, dude, he just wins at life. He is at the top of the list. When I'm like, hey, who are your favorite athletes? That guy is at the top of my list, Jimmer. Right there with you and a few others. But like, he's that type of guy. Can't wait to talk to him.
No, he is. He's a really, like you've said before, he's just a good person down to his core. Like, he cares about people. He's very thoughtful in his answers and his thought process. He does things for a purpose. Now, he's very, very much faith oriented. You know, he's a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and on a mission. And he's very faith driven, which we love. And it's huge for him and his sports, and being able to have faith at his size that he could make it to the NFL or make it to, you know, to the University of Utah. And, you know, that's saying something, you know, a University of Utah guy that we love. And that means that he's obviously a great dude. It's awesome to have him on the pod. And he has some amazing nuggets of things that he, you know, just listen to this episode and take some notes, because he has done a really great job of laying out some different scenarios that we talk about in his life. And it was really fun to talk with him.
the apple does not fall far from the tree in the Covey clan. And he's, yep. like you said, he's just got some things that you definitely are going to want to write down or at least rewind and yep. re-listen to. So we will discuss all of those things with Britton. We have some big topics of our own, like Jimmer making a return trip to his homeland of New York and some fantastic questions in the Open Gym segment. But let's just go ahead and get right to our, what we call the early triple. Three subjects, Jimmer, out the top of the podcast. Of course, we're shooting a tray early in the game. There wouldn't be anything else.
I got to see if I can make it for, you know what I mean? I got to see how I'm feeling that night. You know, if I make the first one, it's over for the opponent, right? So if I miss it, I'll just keep shooting until I make it. Right? Whatever happens, you know, just, you know, we got the early tray. Let's get it.
a true shooter. Like, just keep shooting until you see one go through.
Eventually it's going in.
Good. Okay. Yep. As mentioned, you returned to your home state, New York, recently for yep. the U.S. Open. And I know it's one of your favorite things to do every year. Generally speaking, how was the trip with you and your lovely wife, Whitney, and some friends to watch some of the best tennis players in the world in one of the most iconic tennis venues on the planet?
Yeah, no, it's one of my favorite trips of the year. We go with two of our friends. Shout out to the Trips. That's their name. We would go on a trip with the Trips, and they're awesome. But we go there. We always have, you know, a great time. Each night we have someone different pick the restaurant. So, you know, and we don't tell each other what the restaurant's going to be beforehand. So we pick it, we get the reservations, and then we show up at the restaurant. And it's such a fun experience doing that. And then obviously the tennis matches. I am a huge tennis fan. I think I've said this on the pod before, but my favorite, all-time favorite athlete is Roger Federer, like all-time favorite. And just so I just love tennis. I love watching it. So being able to go there and see some of these amazing athletes, we love going onto the side courts. You know, you get to Arthur Ashe, you get to Louis Armstrong, you get the grandstand, amazing tennis venues. But when you get to the side courts, and you're able to literally sit right next to these doubles players that you've never heard of before, right? Most of them, you're like, I'm not 100% sure who these people are, but they're amazing at their sport. And you could see how hard they hit it and how quick, you know, the ball goes. It's really, really fun. So such a great time. My favorite match was probably the young French guy, Felix Auger-Aliassime. I don't know how to say his name. I'm so sorry about that. But versus Zverev. And it was a great match. It was a night match. And they play, you know, in US Open, that's one of the times where they play until 2 a.m. sometimes.
Yes.
And this was one of those matches, right? They went for a long time. Four-set match, almost 4 hours. Just high level tennis. We were pretty close to the court, which was super fun, and just had a great time. And you know, my favorite, there were two restaurants that stood out. So if you go to New York City next time, I'm gonna throw you a couple of restaurants. First one was the one that Whitney, my wife, mentioned. It was called the Monkey Bar.
Okay.
The reason why she knows about the Monkey Bar is because Taylor and Travis went there about 3 months ago.
Of course they did.
She literally got the reservation so that they, hoping that they would be there again. Like, that was the whole thing. She's like, if it's good for them, it's good for us. So we went, we didn't see them, but it was very good. The pork chop was incredible. And then my favorite restaurant actually I would do was a place called Soother. And it is a restaurant, Thailand food. So
just Thai food. Yeah.
Just straight Thai. Right. And it was a amazing restaurant, great ambiance, but it was a Michelin star restaurant.
Ooh.
So we got there and just incredible food. And it was cheap for New York City, right? Like, it was like $150 for all of us, all four of us. And in New York City, that's unheard of at a Michelin star restaurant. So that is one to put on your radar. But just an amazing trip, and you know, happy to be home though.
Baller on a budget with Soother in New York City. Green curry for the win. We're talking about Thai food. Okay, so it reminds me of a funny story I had last time I was in New York City. I was there technically in New Jersey covering the Sweet 16 and getting ready for Alabama and BYU.
That's right.
They played in New Jersey at the home of the New Jersey Devils, but went over to New York City the night before the game. trying to figure out where we're going to eat after I saw Harry Potter on Broadway. Okay. Highly recommend. Really
Why
fun.
Wouldn't you?
Okay. Yeah. Really fun. Yeah. You're in New York, go to Broadway. And I'm not kidding you. I had a friend opt for Taco Bell.
In New York City?
In New York City.
So you guys drove all the way to New York City. Into the city. You know, it's not like it's, you know, you never know with traffic how long it could. You went into the city and then he got Taco Bell.
We parked and it was a little cold and windy and like, okay, well, where should we go? Like for me, I'm like, I want New York City pizza. Give me New York City pizza. Like there are so many good pizza joints.
Of course.
Downtown in Times Square. Like you
just pick one.
You, look it up. Yelp it. So I found a pizza place with my photographer and we went and ate that. I'm gonna leave them unnamed.
No, I need names. I need names. We'll talk about it later, but I need names. Later.
He went to Taco Bell in Times Square. Why? Why? No.
Listen, I love a good Crunchwrap Supreme. Don't get me wrong. I love a good Crunchwrap, but are you kidding me? Like, what is going on?
Not Did surprisingly, you immediately... he was sick the next morning. Shocker. Well,
yeah, I know. Shocker. But did you leave him immediately? You'd be like, hey, you know what? Just get your own ride home.
We left. We separated. Like, you do your thing.
Yeah. Okay.
We're going to get pizza. Okay. Good. So that's my recent food story from New York City.
Unbelievable.
And while we're on the topic of tennis, you're talking about the access to the players. So when I was working in Palm Springs, my home tennis event was, at the time, it was called the BNP Paribas Open at Indian Wells. And the tennis garden there. And like, you are so close to the players when they practice. Well, as a media member, I was told about this event they called the green carpet. And I thought, okay, cool. What do you mean to do? Like, well, just run with your photographer. You're going to go to this resort place, which is close to the tennis facilities. And there will be some tennis people that come through, like view the players, and you just interview them and kind of have some fun. It's kind of like the red carpet before the Emmys. Any award show, it's their green carpet where they can go and have a fun night and get the green carpet treatment in the world of tennis. I thought, okay. So I show up and like out steps Roger Federer and Andy Murray. And they're all driving up in these like classic, amazing, iconic cars, you know, like rebuilt from the 40s and 60s. These convertibles, you'd see James Bond drive in. From the old school movies. And I thought, this is a little bit bigger of a deal than I thought it was going to be. So I'm like, whoa, okay. I guess I'm doing interviews with all these guys and it's just me. Like I'm the only one doing interviews there. I'm like, where is everybody else? So they're all stopping with me. And then out steps Red Fu. Okay. Do you know who Red Fu is? He's from the group LMFAO. Okay. Party Rock.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
With his amazing hair. Yes. Yeah. I'm like, why is Red Fu at this event? And I'm just hanging out with him, just shooting the breeze with Red Fu because he's dating at the time the number one women's tennis player in the world. Her name was Victoria Azarenka.
And they showed up
and I thought this has to be the most random celebrity situation I have ever been in. But you want to talk about access and watching players like that event in Indian Wells.
I've heard it's amazing.
Hard to beat, my friend.
No, I've heard it's amazing. I've got to get out there one day. I know it's super hot, but it is really, really a cool venue from what I've heard. So got to get out there one day. I'm just stuck on New York City. You know, can't get over it.
Okay. U.S. Open travels. That's point number one from our early triple. How about this? The second gem that we discussed today. And this has come up because this is always controversial for like if you're a true fan or not, Jimmer.
Yeah.
And you actually brought this question up. So maybe, you know what? I'm going to let you ask it and then we'll have a discussion about this.
Yeah. Cause we were, you know, at the US Open, like I said, they go until sometimes 2 a.m. So we were at the Tommy Paul match and one of the nights, he was in the night session. It was the one that he won. And we were there and we were watching Tommy. He gets up 2-0, two sets to nothing. And it was already midnight, maybe midnight, 12:30, somewhere in that area. And we're like, you know what? We're going to go. We're going to get out of here. He's up 2-0, feels pretty safe. and we want to get out before everyone leaves. It's already midnight. You know, we're out of here. So we did. We left. It ended up being a 5-set match. It ended up going until 2:30 in the morning. Everyone was like, you left? You left that match? Are you kidding me? Why would you do that? Like, it was a 5-setter. It was an unbelievable match. And I was like, I know, but I was tired. It was 12:30. You know, I was like, I got to get home, get some sleep. I mean, I'm not a young person anymore. I'm like, what's going on here? So we did. We ended up leaving soon, you know, and there's always been a discussion. Do you leave sporting events early so you can beat the traffic? Or are you staying until the bitter end? Because I know that there are some people that'll die on that hill. You stay until the bitter end. And I'm sure for me, it just depends on who it is. But it's not always like that. So what are your thoughts, Spence?
Yeah, circumstantially, this is a very nuanced conversation. Because if it's your favorite team or like your favorite athlete, I would gather that obviously you're not going to leave. But outside of that, and especially when you get older and you have kids and you realize that we're not with our kids and like we can just do whatever we want.
We can literally do whatever we want.
Sleep in, you know, different things. Like it just, everything changes. So
it does.
This is like, I would answer this question totally differently if it were 15 years ago. But in your circumstance, I back you 100%.
Thank you.
Like, you're tired. Thank you. You're tired.
I was exhausted. We just walked 15 miles in New York City and then we went and watched the match. And, you know, it was a great match. But I thought Tommy Paul had it in 3 and he, you know, it goes 5. What am I supposed to do?
Okay. Then there's the conversation of, okay, let's say you are watching your favorite team and it's just on TV, Jimmer, but your favorite team is getting absolutely destroyed. Ugly game. Maybe it's your New York Giants.
It's happened a lot recently. Happened a lot recently.
Do you keep the TV on and live it out to the bitter end? Okay. Or your beloved BYU Cougars. It hasn't happened a lot. They've won a lot of games. Okay.
Yeah, they have.
If there's a blowout happening, like, are you a person's like, I'm out. I can't do this. Click.
I won't turn the TV off, but I'll leave the room. Right. So I keep the door open just in case, because what if all of a sudden they have some semblance of a comeback, some semblance, even if it's, you know, they get a field goal, whatever it is. And all of a sudden you can feel a little momentum shift just because you're hearing it, you know, from the other room. Then I'll come back and I'll watch it. But it's really hard to watch your favorite team just get destroyed. And it's happened many times. But yes, I don't fully turn it off until I know that it's like over, you know, if it's over and we lost and it's but most of the time I'm going to just leave the room.
I have vowed that I will never turn the TV off on my favorite team, but like you, you can disconnect emotionally. Like you can be distracted, right? Like, maybe I'll check some emails on my phone or go play a game with my kids or whatever. The TV will stay on, but everybody deserves a little grace when it comes to the frustrations and your team's not playing well. Now the last point here in our early triple, and it's all New York themed because it's one of my favorite things that is cyclical in social media, Jimmer. I don't know how many different basketball accounts there are, but they all find your game with the Sacramento Kings against the New York Knicks at Madison Square Garden when you returned to your homeland and had your career night in the NBA. And it brings me joy every time I watch the highlights, especially the reaction from your bench and teammates, the deeper and deeper the three-pointers get. What was that night like for you at Madison Square Garden?
Yeah, I mean, it's my, you know, favorite arena in the NBA to play in. It's just getting into the arena, the buzz of New York City. You know, you're going in and there's people out and it's just a different feel than any other arena that you go into. And then you get into the actual arena and you feel like you're on a stage because it's dark, you know, around the actual, you know, the seats are dark, so you can't really see into the stands. You just have light on you, right? And then there's all the celebrities that are there. So I've always had fairly decent games in MSG. Obviously, I'm from New York, so a lot of my family will come up, or friends will come up for those games. So I was always pretty amped for those games. And I remember this one specifically in New York. You know, I was able to have a really good game. I had 6 threes and, you know, 24 points, and we ended up beating them in the Madison Square Garden. And I was there. And, you know, I was hitting, you know, I probably had hit 3 or 4 threes at this point. And we were we had the ball that went out of bounds. And I went over to take it out. And sitting right on the Celebrity Row was my guy Ben Stiller, who is one of my favorite actors of all time. He is hilarious. He is so great. And he's a huge Knicks fan. So I go there and, you know, I get the, you know, walk into the to the ref to go grab the ball. And he's like, "Hey, Jimmer, could you please stop killing us right now?" he's like, "What are you doing?" And I'm sitting there. I was like, "Oh," he's like, "Hey," I'm just like, "it's nice to meet." He's like, "It's nice to meet you, by the way." And he comes out, shook his hand. I'm like, "It's nice to meet you, Mr. Stiller." I'm like, I didn't know if I was supposed to call him Ben. I didn't know if I was supposed to call him Mr. Stiller. Like, what am I didn't know. I was just so frazzled at that point. I was kind of locked in on the game and I was frazzled. And, but he was a little bit of a fan, which was really cool. And I ended up being in Westchester for a little while with the Westchester Knicks. And he came to a game there with his son and sat courtside, and there's not many people in those games, so you saw him, and I got to speak with him quite a bit at halftime and take a picture with his son and said I was a big fan. So that was all over like my favorite experience in the NBA at that game, and just electric to be able to be in the Garden and actually have people cheer for me when I'm shooting and making those shots, because a lot of people knew me from New York. So it was pretty darn cool.
Oh, magical night, no doubt about it. And I mean, in the huddle, like when you're cooking like that, like they're telling me they're drawing every play up for you at that point.
At the end, they were starting to draw some plays up for me, right? Like, and generally speaking, in the NBA, you know, you get your the plays, you play off of your main guys, right? So at that time, it's DeMarcus Cousins, Tyreke Evans, those guys were, so you kind of play off of those guys and you kind of just eat off of that. But at the end of the game, I was shooting really well. They were drawing some plays up for me to get open for shots to be able to help win that game, which was really fun.
Oh, love that. The homeland, always good to Jimmer. Yep. Later on, because that is such a high-profile market, it's hard not to feel the nerves of playing in a venue like MSG or, frankly, in the NBA anywhere or the NFL. We're going to talk to Britton Covey about that and ask him, okay, as a punt returner, when you're staring up at a ball that's kicked a mile into the sky and everybody's hanging on every last second of, are you going to catch this ball or drop it? And how you can get so frazzled or not frazzled them. What's going to happen? It's such a unique thing in professional football to be the punt returner in a team sport like that. So interesting to hear his take on that.
I have to ask you real quick, just real quick. What is it like having all eyes on you? Like you do live TV a lot, right? You do a lot of live TV. I don't do as much. I've done a few things, but you're on live TV a lot. What is that like? Because we're going to talk to get into Brain's head about this. What is it like for you to have no take? You know what I mean? It's one take and that's it. Like you get no do-overs. How do you flourish through it? Because you're good at it. How do you flourish during that?
Well, not surprisingly, like you as a professional athlete, you talk about reps and consistency and practicing everything you can and being so methodical about just handling tough situations. But the more reps you build up, like I've been in the business almost 20 years, and like there has been some absolute fires behind the scenes. Okay? Speaking of, like, for example, going back to my days in Palm Springs, I was calling tennis highlights, I think, between John Isner and Novak Djokovic, and I'm doing my live shot, and I'm at the place. I'm not obviously in my studio. I'm doing this remote, and it's live. And 30 seconds before we come back from my sportscast, my monitor dies. And so I can't see anything that I'm supposed to be talking about, but everybody at home can see everything that we are showing on the TV. So I am calling highlights through the audio in my ear based on when the crowd would cheer and hoping that they roll the video at the right time. And trying to like pan it out. But you want to talk about panic moment? It's like, okay, let's do this. But because you've been in it so much, you just, you kind of get used to it. And I've been in so many stressful situations and awkward situations that you build up those reps and it's just like, okay, on to the next. Like, let's do this. And it's almost become like a safe space. So people are like,
true pro.
How do you not freak out? And I'm like, weirdly, like when the light goes on, because like, it's my job and it's what I do. Like, I feel, okay, I'm in my place. Like this is where I'm supposed to be. And I don't know if that relates to maybe how you felt, certainly at BYU, because it looked like you were never scared. Like, I just, I always admire the pressure that, athletes feel and just like handle it, and it can go out, you can still perform at a high level. So at what point were you like, nah, this is cool. I'm good with this. Like, yeah, I'm not freaking out.
Yeah. It's not right away, you know, cause I was nervous before every game. Like, it was never a game that I played in where I was not nervous. I was nervous. But I thought nervous were a good thing. That means that I cared. It means that I was ready for it. I was ready. It meant something to me. If I didn't feel nervous, it would be a different thing for me. So I used those nerves in a positive way, and which was important to me. So I wanted to feel those nerves. But then once the ball started to go and you actually started to get out there and actually play, those nerves go away. And then it's muscle memory. And that's what I always tell people. It's muscle memory, because I've done this thousands of times by myself in a gym. So when I get out here, it's the exact same motion. You just have to be confident that you prepared that way to make sure that when you get out there, you feel that comfortable. And so that's how I did it. And I was like, I worked as hard as I possibly could. I know I've put in the time. I deserve to do well. And that's how I thought. And that was the confidence that I put out there. So it's always a mindset thing. It's a mindset. It's a preparation. It's a mindset. And then once you get out there, it's muscle memory, just because you've done it so many times.
Listen, I know this podcast is live in a way, but are you ready to do full on live TV, Jimmer? Like, you ready to go? You ready to do this?
Not yet. I'm going to leave that to you. And we'll do this for now. And we'll talk about that later.
There's room to grow. Room to evolve. Good stuff, man. Oh, awesome opening segments and everything discussed, from Taco Bell in Times Square to Ben Stiller courtside at Madison Square Garden. There's nothing that we won't overturn on this podcast, my friend. Okay, let's take our first break. When we come back, we go inside the huddle, if you will, with Britton Covey to discuss what it's like to be an NFL return man. And how do you handle the emotion of thinking you're going to be with the LA Rams, and then a few days later, you're cut and you're literally playing in the NFL on the other side of the country? This is what he is doing. Britton Covey joins From the Logo with Jimmer Fredette when we continue. This episode is brought to you by Eddie, the HR software built for small businesses who put people first. At Eddie, we believe work isn't just about payroll or paperwork. It's about people, culture, and the everyday wins that make life meaningful.
Eddie helps leaders spend less time on HR headaches and more time building teams that thrive.
Welcome back to From the Logo with Jimmer Fredette, presented by Eddie. It's time for the full court press with our VIP guest, and he happens to be one of the most dynamic return specialists in the game of football, both at the collegiate level and now making his mark in the National Football League. He also happens to be one of the greatest humans on this wonderful earth that we live in. He is Britton Covey. Welcome to the show, Britton. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Greatest humans by whose standards?
We might
that's,
be
that's
a
big
little
expectation
bit
right there. Yeah, just a little, man. Britton, yeah. you were you know, just own it, man.
Yeah, just own it. Well, I appreciate it, guys. No, I'm hard to be on. Yeah, super excited to be on.
I'd like to point out that you are a man that is always prepared, as any return man should be, Britton. You have your own microphone ready to go for this podcast while you're traveling out and about.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else to say, honestly. It just happened to be in the suitcase. No, my brother and I, we have our own little podcast. We interview authors, you know, of inspiring books. So it's a fun little thing we do on the side. But so that's man, the purpose of the microphone.
Man, I thought you bought it just for us. That makes it a little worse, I guess. But no, that's great. Everyone check out the podcast. Everyone check out
Paradigm Shifting Books.
Okay, we'll give that a shout out. Absolutely. No, I love that. So before we get started, just so you know, full disclosure, I grew up in New York. All right, right. New York all the way. Been a New York Giants fan my whole life. All right. So I understand that there's a little you know, right away, I can just feel the tension between me and you just because of that. But I remember specifically the 2011 season. I was on a bus and we were, you know, it was the fall.
leaves are changing, things are great, football is on. And I was tracking the New York Giants versus the Philadelphia Eagles football game that was going on. It was a big game. They were both good at that time. Donovan McNabb, all those guys. I remember the Eagles were making a comeback, and it wasn't great. And I remember there was at the end of the game, and we were punting to the Eagles. Yeah, you know where I'm going with this story, right? Punting to the Eagles. We punt it, and of course, the guy named DeSean Jackson is back there. And he is extremely dynamic. Maybe not as dynamic as you, but he was a dynamic punt returner. He punts, we punt the ball away, and he, I think he fumbles the punt, or you know what I mean? Yep. And he runs back and goes and grabs it. And I'm like, we got it. We got the game won. He didn't catch it easily. We're going to get back there. No problem. He picks the ball up, takes it 90 yards to score, and wins the game. And I was just furious. I'm not gonna lie, I was absolutely
liar.
I watched it live. I was furious, and all my teammates on the bus were just yelling at me because they all knew that was such a big Giants fan. And that was one of the most difficult times for me as a New York Giants fan against the Philadelphia Eagles. So I just had to get that out there and just, you know, say my piece that obviously, you know, we got a little tension, but I'm excited to have you on the pod, and we appreciate you coming on. Now we're going to talk about, you know, you as a punt returner and all of your life stories and everything. But that we've had some battles. Let's just put it that way.
I was going to, you guys aren't the Cowboys. I'll say that. You're not the Cowboys. But that play is known very well among Philadelphians as Miracle of the Meadowlands. So I don't know what you guys call it, but. But over here,
Definitely was that. That
the
was
meltdown at the Meadowlands.
That was a dark day. That was a dark, dark day. And ever since then, it's been a dislike for the Eagles, except for when I see Britton back there returning punts.
That's fine.
I love it.
Okay, Britton, with that in mind and that backstory to set up the Giants-Eagles rivalry, among the other NFC East rivalries, we do want to spend a little bit of time just getting into the mindset of a punt returner, because it takes a unique person to want to be in that position with all eyes on you. And we were talking in an earlier segment about how to handle the pressure of that all eyes moment, because literally when you are in the stadium, 70,000 people are all locked in on if you catch the ball and what you're going to do with the ball, not to mention the millions watching worldwide on their television sets. So how do you prepare yourself mentally to handle a moment of that magnitude with that type of pressure?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, something that I've had to work at, honestly. Because, yeah, a lot of times in sports, you think everyone's watching you, but it's kind of in your head. But this is a rare scenario in which everybody actually is, right? And for those who know, anyone listening, especially Philadelphia fans, have very high expectations. I mean, they've had some of the great returners of all time, right? And Darren Sproles, an undersized guy that I looked up to, he was my idol growing up. You know, he's the guy I looked at, and I was like, I can do that, right? Undersized. And now every undersized kid in Utah, they come up to me. I'm like, man, I'm glad I can put on for the shorter guys. But I think for me with punt return, I've always had to take the more mental approach to it. What happens, and I see this every year across the country in college and in the NFL, a lot of times people think you can just stick any quick, fast guy back there. You know, anybody who's good at running with the ball. And punt return is a very niche skill. It's a specific type of running, and catching a punt, especially from these NFL punters, is really difficult. So for me, really what I pride myself on is just watching more film than any returner in the league or the world, because I'm quick, I'm fast, but compare me to some of these guys in the league and I'm average, below average, right? And so what's going to separate me is just understanding exactly what all 11 guys are trying to do. And so before I started to take on a role as a receiver for the Eagles last year, and I was just strictly punt return, I just owned the role, right? I obsessed over it, and I would go and show film clips to each individual person on my unit. Okay, this is the guy you're going against. This is what he likes to do the majority of the time. This is the movie, you know? And so it's really, it's so much more than just punt, catch, run, right? And I think the best punt returners are the ones who take it really seriously like that. And when I was going to college, Kyle Whittingham, for those of listening who know Coach Whittingham, he is very old school, very obsessed with ball security. And I knew the way I'm going to get on the field as a freshman was by simply catching the punt. And so I actually hired BYU's old punter to come to my house, Johnny Linehan, for those.
I know Johnny.
And he would come to my house twice, three times a week, and he would punt to me 50 to 100 punts. And all I did was just catch, catch, catch. And it got to the point, you know, I got up there as a freshman. And yeah, I mean, I was going against some guys that were really good. They might have even been better at running with the ball, but I caught it every time. And so Coach Witt put me back there. And so anyways, I could write a discourse, I feel like, on the little things, but those are the main ones.
I love that. That's so interesting to me. And you talk about the niche, right? It's the niche of fielding punts and being able to be a punt returner. And that's something that I get asked a lot by parents. How do I get my kid on the field? How do I get my kid on the court? Or a kid will come like, what do I need to do to get better? And for me, what I always tell kids is I don't want you to necessarily expand every single part of your game. I actually want you to niche down. I want you to find what you're really good at and get great at it. Because if you can get great at that and you can do that on the court or on the field at a higher level than anybody else, you're going to stand out. And then the coach will be like, oh, I need that skill. So I think that's super fascinating. I love that you found that going into your freshman year, because, you know, just following up, like, how did you learn that? You know, like, why kick returning? You know, you were obviously a great receiver, you know, a guy that could get up the field. Just, you know, you were obviously super difficult to tackle, low to the ground, really great. Could have been a great slot, or you were a great slot receiver, but that could have been your main position. And, you know, you decided to niche down. Why did you end up doing that? And, you know, talk a little bit about to the kids out there, why you did that specifically.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because that's one of my main answers that I also give to parents that talk to me, right? Because I feel like it's very common as a former athlete, parents ask you. And the two things I say is, one, play multiple sports, right? We've taken tallies around, you know, the NFL locker room. And I think there's maybe one or two guys that only played one sport in high school. Mm-hmm. Everybody
That's
else.
So interesting. Sports. Yeah.
Yeah. But the other one is, yeah, having a role and embracing a role is really something that should be celebrated. The best teams have that, but also, I mean, the best players. So I always like to basically pin a quote from my grandfather to my career. You know, I think my career is really defined by a quote from my grandfather in one of his books. And it's, build on your strengths and organize to make weaknesses irrelevant. And I think that is kind of how I've tried to live my athletic career. He's talking specifically about skills. Like you said, this standing out and building on your strengths and organized to make your weaknesses irrelevant. If you're going to ask me to go block a linebacker, at the end of the day, coach, that's on you when the play fails.
It's not my fault.
I'll do it. It's not
I'll
about willingness.
It. Yeah.
But I remember, you know, when I learned, okay, I'm not lifting for the purpose of getting bigger to block a linebacker. I'm lifting for injury prevention. And literally in that 1 second, all of a sudden I enjoyed lifting from that moment on. Okay, I'm not doing this to be able to, you know, run someone over. It's, you know, and so you shift every interaction you have with a coach, everything to kind of fit your paradigm and how it's going to help you and your skill set. And that's, you know, in athletics and a job, that's how you survive. So we just had a meeting a couple days ago with Coach Sirianni, who I really respect, really love him as a coach. And we have this meeting every year at the beginning of the season, and he basically defines everybody's role. And he says, some people don't like this meeting, but I'm not putting a box on you, but this is how we see your role. And some of the guys, he literally says, your role is to basically be the breather guy. When the starter needs a breather, you go in and you do the dirty work and then you come out. You're not getting a pass. You're not getting the ball.
Yeah.
You know, and people go one of two ways. They either really get mad about it or they embrace it. And as they embrace it, their role grows.
Britton Covey dropping absolute fantastic knowledge on From the Logo right now. Just one more time, because I know our listeners are going to be like, what was that quote again? Say that one more time from your grandfather so that we can burn that into the minds of our watchers and our listeners.
Yeah, it's build on your strengths and then organize to make weaknesses irrelevant.
Mm, love that.
I'm not exactly sure which book it is. I think it's from Seven Habits. But
Seven Habits, you know,
He's got a whole thing about that, and there's a lot of great books about this right now. So,
secondly, I need to go back to the fact that you hired a BYU punter as a former Utah star, proving that BYU and Utah can work together for the greater good, Britton.
We absolutely can.
Burying the lead?
This has been
my plea for a decade now. Everything's better when BYU and Utah and Utah State are good, right?
Agreed.
And the rivalry is more fun, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I like having the game every year. It's like means something. But man, when BYU, Utah, and Utah State are all good, it makes it so fun in the state.
I used to tell people all the time, like, I wanted Utah and Utah State to win every single game. Except the game that we played, right? Because I wanted it to be, because I knew we were going to win. So I was like, hey, I need you guys to get on our level and let's go out there and then let's see the best, right? That's what makes it fun. So I love hearing that. That's 100%.
Absolutely. And it's funny because, you know, and I definitely think this might have been more of like a 90s, early 2000s things, just kind of the hatred between schools. I don't think the public realizes like how tight some of the athletes are these days because of social media. Like,
for sure.
I would go down to BYU and I would run routes with the other BYU receivers. I mean, Puka, Nacua, and Samson, they're some of my best friends from high school, all those guys. So it's like, it's kind of a state pride thing. You kind of rep for the state. Except when we play them. Oh, you best believe, even though I can't block. Yeah, I'm going to block that.
I'm going to block that game. I'm going after the biggest guy. I don't care.
I love that.
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay, now let's take this conversation into your current state in the NFL. You're back with the Philadelphia Eagles. And for those that may not have been following your timeline closely, this is a volatile business. And you're with the Los Angeles Rams. And frankly, Britton, I was ready for you to be on that 53-man roster in LA with Puka. Yeah. And
I know
teammates with him thought that was happening. And then, you know, it can be a brutal business. Sometimes all of a sudden you're not on the 53-man roster and you're a free agent and you go back to Philly. So what has the past few weeks of your life been like as you have gone from expecting something to now a totally different story and you have a homecoming of sorts back in Philadelphia?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this isn't a conversation that I shy away from. I actually enjoy it because I think there's a lot of misconceptions about professional sports lifestyles in general, right? Yeah. The majority of the guys on the team, we're not on guaranteed contracts or anything like that.
Yep.
As for those that can see, I don't know if this is on YouTube or podcast, but I'm in a hotel room right now that I've spent a good portion of the last 3-4 years of my life in. Sadly, I don't have my wife and kids out here with me because, I went to LA. First 3 years in Philly, wonderful, right? 2 Super Bowl appearances in 3 years. Just, I got so fortunate to be in this organization. And anyways, I had an injury last year that kind of, you know, messed with some contractual things in Philadelphia. So I chose to go to LA this last year. I was really excited about it. Up until the last second, I thought I was going to make the 53-man roster. And just like you said, sure enough, got cut. And this is my third time being cut in the league. I was cut by the Eagles twice before and put on practice squad and elevated to the active roster. So it's not new, but you know, it doesn't make it any easier. It's like being fired again. And you know, if I had the choice between the practice squads and different, you know, teams around the league too, I was going to go back to Philadelphia where they, I feel like they really know who I am as a player and just love the guys over here. I mean, so the AJ, Devontae, some of my best friends. I love, you know, obviously playing for Jalen and all these things. So, but it's been tough because my family, you know, are looking for a place now. And you're paying a double mortgage at all times because you have a place in Utah just in case I get cut again, you know. And so you just, you accept it and you know it's not forever. And you try and make the most of it. And I feel very blessed. I feel very blessed. Not everybody gets opportunities. You know, people don't make it in the NFL. And it's always a shame to me when someone doesn't. And I feel like the conversation around them is, he didn't pan out in the NFL. And I always say, if you only knew that it wasn't that simple. I've seen guys outperform draft picks 5-1 in practice. But who are you going to keep on the team? You have to keep the draft pick. Otherwise, you look foolish for keeping or for wasting a draft pick, you know? And so that's one of many scenarios.
Yeah.
So it comes with the territory, like you said, Spencer.
Yeah, it really does. And there's so much about timing and situation in the NFL. It's about the coach, if they believe in you, if they see what your value is and your talent. That's why it's a smart move getting back to Philly. They know who you are. They know your talents, right? That's really big because then you can be you and you can go out and do what you do. And then at that point, obviously, we want you to stay with the Philadelphia. I want you on the New York Giants, but we'll want you to stay with the Philadelphia Eagles as long as you possibly can, and or have an opportunity to go somewhere else because you're showcasing your skill. You know, it's so interesting. There's so many scenarios out there. Like you said, that my favorite is always, you know, someone wants to they want to trade someone, and because they want to trade someone, they have to play it more. Because they have to get their trade value up, right? So it's like you're sitting there and you're like, wait, you don't want this guy on your team, but you have to play him way more than me because of the fact that you need the trade value to go up so that you trade and get the person you want, right? Like there's always situations, scenarios that are going on with all that stuff. So which is pretty incredible.
Or just the fact that because I'm on practice squad at the moment, at any moment I could be claimed to a team's active roster, and I don't have any say in it. And
nothing.
You know, I loved playing for Coach McVay in the spring, and you know, he's talked to me, you know, if something happens over there, if I get claimed, then I got to move back across the country. Oh, man, that's going to be, we'll see what happens.
You're going to get your frequent flyer miles in. Hopefully not, but you could.
Yeah.
But so, Brandon, I just want to talk quickly, go back. I just want to talk about your kind of like, how you got into football specifically. You're an undersized guy, right? And I know for a fact that you have been told that your whole life, right? I mean, I was told that my whole life, and I'm, you know, I'm 6'2" and basketball player, you know, but that's small for a basketball player, and is undersized, not athletic enough, all of these things. I'm sure you were told that throughout your career and still are to this day. How did you mentally, physically overcome that? You know, to be able to have the drive, the passion, the wherewithal of like, hey, I don't care what anybody says. This is what I want to do. This is how I'm going to do it. And you went out there and got it done. I want to get into your brain and hear what the factors were to make you be able to be an NFL roster.
Yeah. I mean, I credit a lot of the people I looked up to. You know, this is the whole thing. I really do think representation matters in a lot of areas because I'm a product of why representation matters. And obviously it's all, you know, skills based, but I looked up to the Darren Sproles of the world. You guys know I grew up a huge BYU fan. So even guys like Nate Mickle, you know, Nate Mickle, Austin Colley, all those guys that were huge, I just looked up to, and I saw myself in them. And then at the end of the day, it's just having great parents. I credit so much to my dad, who never let me see my size as a disadvantage. I always saw it as an advantage. It's funny. I look back at pictures of me and my high school best friends, and I realize these guys are all 6'7" Polynesians, and I felt like I was one of them. You know, I never realized that I was the one sticking out like a sore thumb. I felt like I was Devin Kaufusi, 6'7", you know, Gabe Reed, and so really, if you have kids, they're like that. You ingrain in them that it is an advantage and not a disadvantage. And they'll see it as such if you just keep hammering that home. I did have a few coaches that were you can't play quarterback in high school. You can't do this. You can't do that. But if the overwhelming thing I was hearing in my life was that I could and that I was just going to do it in a different way, that didn't affect me as much. So you have to couple that with a lot of talent, right? But I even just think as a general thing for people who don't have talent, if the overwhelming thing they hear is turn that negative into a positive, they're going to be okay. Honestly, I never dreamed of playing in the NFL. We don't have an NFL team in Utah. I was always about college, always wanted to play in college. That was the dream, And I remember, when I first opened my eyes to Utah, it was kind of along the same lines that they had a returner named Reggie Dunn, right? Who was a great returner and a little bit undersized and quick. And I was like, oh man, that was the first time I was like, maybe I could wear red. Still didn't want to. But as time went on, you started to realize if I'm going to make it, I have to be with someone who sees my size not as a disadvantage. And so I got offered by BYU, got offered by Utah State and Utah, and then a few out-of-state schools. But it was something very special and unique. Every time I talked to Coach Whittingham and Kalani, because Coach Satake was at Utah when I committed there, he was the one that actually offered me over the phone. They never saw my size as a disadvantage. And I think people always ask me why I didn't go to BYU, and they offered me a scholarship. I always just felt a different level of confidence about my body type and what I could do, with you. And I'm really, really fortunate to have played for people who saw that, Morgan Scally and things like that. So Coach Satake, just great mentors.
Britton, that mindset feels like it will follow you the rest of your life, especially even in the scenario that you are dealing with in Philadelphia, because it's not like you have all of a sudden grown 6 inches. I mean, you are who you are, right? The Eagles know who you are, and it feels like they obviously believe in what you can do. So how do you take that belief that they have in you and use it to motivate you to elevate yourself once again, potentially from the practice squad to the 53-man roster? Because I saw a couple of news outlets in Philadelphia today said that, look, a healthy Britton Covey, they believe, is the Eagles' best option as a return man. So you got some juice behind you, but how are you using that mindset to help you right now?
I mean, for me, it's all the habitual stuff, right? The catching the punts and doing all those things that you keep doing. But then it's all of the extra stuff that makes you unique. Because if you were to look around the league, you'd find 30 other Britton Coveys. It's just the reality. But will you find 30 other Britton Coveys who are willing to do this, who are willing to watch this much film, understand exactly what a punter's thinking when the wind is coming from the northeast, going 15 miles an hour and bouncing off the side, and he likes to hit the banana. It's like, You have to get so meticulous about it. And that's why the coaches have trusted me. That's why I made the team in the first place. I was an undrafted free agent, and I've been in the two receiving rooms I've been in, ESPN just ranked them number one and number two in the league. It's just, so I never feel shame about not starting at receiver. Yeah. I'm like, I'm Devontae Smith's backup. I'm proud of that.
No big deal.
But it's just kind of obsessing over the things that will differentiate me. And once again, if it doesn't happen, I'm at the point right now where I feel okay about that. Because at first you feel like this weird, almost guilt and shame that you're not starting at receiver or something, that you have to explain this to everybody. And then as you get older in life, you kind of realize that even if you do explain it to people, they don't really get it or care, and you have to be okay with it. And so, you know, I saw a lot of my teammates go through that who never really got a chance in the NFL, and they were good enough. I'll tell you, they were good enough, but it's a thing. Sorry, I'm getting sidetracked here, but it's a thing that's, I think, underratedly difficult for athletes, because, you know, as much as you explain it, people won't understand, and that's okay. You have to be okay with that.
Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, I understand completely. There's a lot of guys out there with more talent than myself or than you, but it's about the mindset. It's about the work. It's the ethic. It's the belief in yourself and just going out there and doing the right things on a day-to-day basis, right? Just consistently doing the right stuff. And
they're working on stuff that actually translates and makes a difference.
Matters.
I've seen quote unquote weight room warriors. They can squat more than anybody in the world, but they, you know, or they do, they're so quick in these drills, but they have no idea how to run a post. They have no idea how to run a successful option route. You know, it's just, it's understanding what actually translates.
Yeah. I always tell kids, they come up and they ask for workouts, and I was like, okay, well, where do you get your shots in the game? Like, what is your coach having you do? Like, what are the shots? And some of them be like, well, I don't really know. Well, that's the first thing, right? Yeah. Figure out exactly where you're going to get your shots, and then rep those shots out in practice as much as you possibly can. And you got to do them game speed, or else you're wasting your time. So I'm like, you have to know what it is. You have to do things that are actually going to translate to the game. And obviously you've been doing that for a long, long time. And it's awesome to be able to see that. So I want to talk a little bit. I mean, you've been to Super Bowls, right? Like we have to have a conversation at least about that. I've never been in two Super Bowls, so I'm curious, right? Obviously you won one, you lost one. I want to know a little bit about the different years that what year that you won the Super Bowl, the year that you lost the Super Bowl. Was there a different mindset or anything change from the year that you lost the Super Bowl than going into the year that you won the Super Bowl? Was there a mindset shift, or was there something that changed that let you guys get over the hump, or was it business as usual and it just kind of worked out that way and you guys got better, a little more talented? What is the difference, do you think, in your opinion?
There was a different mindset, and I would say, but it wasn't that we weren't prepared in the first one. I mean, we almost won that game. I think we should have won that game, right? It was one of those ones where it could have gone either way, really.
Easy, for sure.
So that was just a great game, but I'll tell you, that second one, I've never seen or felt a team be more confident in what was going to happen. I think some of it had to do with the leaders on our team having been there, you know, Jalen having been there the first time and not gotten over the hump. And I don't think he had a single minute of the year where he didn't think about that. Right. He just obsessed over it, and he was so ready for it. But also Saquon, I mean, one of the things I always like, I don't know if anyone's ever really got this on film, but this first drive, this last year against Kansas City, AJ catches a deep ball down the sideline on third down. Great, great play. And they call offensive pass interference. Replay shows clearly was an offensive pass interference. And at the time, the big conversation was that the refs are keeping the Chiefs in it and all this stuff, right?
Yep. I remember.
You know, and so there was just kind of this element of, oh, here we go again. This is going to happen. You know? And Saquon came and he started screaming at everybody on the bench and everybody on the sideline. And he was just doing this. He was saying, we stay here. We don't get too high. We don't get too low. You know, and just that level. It was the same thing after Coop's interception, you know, for a touchdown. Celebrate for 10 seconds. But it was like, we were here before. We were up 10 points at halftime and we got a little high. So we're going to stay here. And so, I don't know. It was just a really cool team to be a part of. Both teams really, and like I said, we weren't not prepared in the first one. It's just a different level the second time. But the Super Bowl's so interesting. It feels almost more like a concert than a game. I mean,
oh, for sure.
Everything is the media timeouts are twice as long, halftime's twice as long. You sing like 50 songs before the kickoff, and it's just you're pretty nervous. You know, I'm not gonna lie.
But imagine
when I was back there. It was like you would just see flashes every second, every half second. You know, so it was pretty cool.
Philadelphia Eagles returner and receiver Britton Covey is on From the Logo. I'd like to talk about, and you just mentioned his name, Saquon Barkley, because he's had a very public release, if you will, of his faith and growing faith in God and religion. And Britton, you are a man who is not shy to share how faith has shaped your life and has given you perspective and helped you find important balance in your life, as not just, you know, being dominated by football, but there is true balance. So what have you seen from Saquon and his shift with that dynamic coming into his life and the common ground that you have with him in that regard?
Yeah. So this has been really fun to kind of be a part of his journey there, because Say and I are close. He's one of my golfing buddies. He loves golf, you know, but it's been really cool to see his change in the last year and a half as he's learned a lot more about Christianity. And I'll tell you, one of the main discussion topics that we have at lunch and things is about religion and these types of things. Saquon's already a great person and things. And we even had a group message last year, a few of us, where we would share scriptures, and inspirational gospel thoughts. So it's been really cool. And you ask him about it, and I think he recognizes just a different level of peace having come to his life, regardless of what happens on the football field. So yeah, it's really cool because he's very open about it as well, and all my teammates know I am. And so that's one of the fun discussion points, is they come up and they say, Covey. And then they just say one huge misconception. I say, okay, let me outline.
That's great.
So, you know, or they'll see me in my garments in the locker room. Luckily, we got a few other members on the team. But
yeah, that helps. It helps.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's been really cool. And football and faith kind of go hand in hand. The vast majority of guys in most football locker rooms are very faith-based. It's pretty cool. There's a lot of, you know, we do Bible studies, we do things like that. So it's a unique environment to be a part of. But Saquon, yeah, he's not shy about it, and he's got some great questions.
That's so cool. I love being able to speak about our religion. You know, specifically, ultimately, we're all followers of Christ, right? That's what we're trying to do. I'm trying to become like him and be like him, and that's awesome to be able to hear that. And I've had so many good discussions with a lot of my teammates on the plane, you know, in the locker room, whatever it is, to be able to speak on Christ and, you know, talk about the misconceptions that may be out there for our religion, specifically the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But just really cool. And just speaking of that, you just had such a great feature on the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, you know, socials and website. How did that come about? How did you get asked to do that? How was that filming like? And then also just to back that up, why is faith, you know, so important for you to be able to be outward about, right? Like, why is that important to you? It's so cool to see.
First of all, just a fun little story, you know, speaking of just, you know, faith in the locker room things. The other day we were on a plane, this was a year ago or so, but we were on a plane and the turbulence started to be really bad. And so my teammates turned to me and say, hey, Cup, you got your angel suit on? And I had to kind of pull up my garments to show them, like, hey, don't worry. And they're like, okay, we're safe. Because I've
explained, that is hilarious.
I've explained garments to them.
I love that.
But yeah, the church Instagram, they just messaged me and sent me a couple of videos that they had done and asked if I would be willing to share a little bit. And they said, we like to keep it to 90 seconds. And you know, if you would like. And so I said, you know, of course. And I really, I just took stuff from my camera roll and sent it to them and they could do it. But then I thought, okay, if I get 90 seconds to share a message about my faith, what script do I want to write? Like,
yeah,
what is an important thing to me that I truly believe that I would share with someone that people might relate to? And so what I share in the video is just, you know, kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, especially in Philadelphia, and as a football player, you get this feeling that your performance is everything, and there's so much pressure out here, and it can be crippling at times, and depressing at times if you don't play well, and people treat you based on how you perform. And I think that's not just football, but that's many jobs, and it's something that I think a lot of people relate to. And so the closer I've gotten to God and the more I learn of Jesus Christ, I just realized that you and your worth, your value is not dependent or reliant on your performance. It's just your existence. It's that you are. God doesn't love you based on a performance. He loves you because you exist. And he loves you because you're his. And the closer you get to God, the more you feel that. You know, I like to think of life as kind of like a graph, like ups and downs. And if you were to just draw a line through the middle, trending upwards, and say, that's Christ. And he is going to pull you closer to that line steady so that there aren't as many ups and downs. And what I mean by not as many ups is you understand that in the ups, it's not because of your own strength, because I'm this football player, right? And in the downs, you understand that there's something more. There's a peace about it. So that's what I always say to people is your value doesn't lie in your performance. It lies in your existence with God. And I really do believe that. I don't know how much impact, if any, God has in sports. I definitely think he can and he does. But I think it's few and far between. You know, when you got the punter praying on one side, that I drop it, and then me praying that the punter gives me a terrible punt, right? Yeah. It's I think God kind of stays out of it for the most part. Not that he can't. I think there are times that I have felt a couple specific instances, but for the most part, I think he's just there for you, holding your hand through it all, and he's giving you strength and peace in the ups and downs of things. And I love to share that. And it's interesting to feel how my testimony of that has grown through experience. You know, I don't judge anyone for, you know, not believing or having questions. But man, I just feel so grateful for the experiences I've had, and just getting to a point with your faith in God where it feels like you kind of understand his role in your life, you know. And anyways, a lot to go, a long way to go, but I'm grateful for that, because I'll tell you, it can be challenging.
Always so insightful and genuine, and frankly, incredibly relatable, Britton, which is why Jimmer and I and so many hundreds of thousands of other football fans and people like you and enjoy spending time with you and hearing from you is because there's not a fake bone in your body, and that's really, really hard to find in this world. And I want to close out with this, a couple of quick hitters that kind of shows your relatability and just how down to earth you are. I need you to confirm the story that when you first played a game with the Philadelphia Eagles, and I'm sure you've told this 10 times, but let's go back there again, you didn't have a parking pass to get into the venue, Britton. You had to walk, I don't know how long, but through all the fans, as a player in the game, through the tailgates.
Like, yeah.
What was that experience like?
I coined the nickname Jetro Covey for a little while because there's something called Jetro Lot over here. And so they called me Jetro Covey. Yeah, I mean, I was, like I said, I was my first fall camp, I was cut, signed to the practice squad. But then my first ever game, I was elevated to the active roster. So I didn't have the active roster pass. I was just on the practice squad. I assumed that the people there would know. And so I pulled up behind my friend. Didn't help that he was in, you know, a really nice car and I was in my little Toyota. But, you know, I don't think that conveyed much confidence. But, yeah, they said, who are you? You're not on a list. I said, oh, I'm Britton Covey, receiver, punt returner. And they were like, can you verify that? And But I was like, I don't know. I mean, you can look at the roster, but I was on practice squad and then I got super flustered. I'm nervous. It's my first game. And they're like, dude, we got to keep this moving. Like, we can't verify you here. And then they're like, go over here. And so I go over here. And then this other guy's like, yeah, man, you got to park over here. This is where the other guys park. He totally led me. So I parked quarter mile away, half mile away, paid $40. paid $40 to park at, you know, section E, walk through the tailgaters. And a few people recognized me. And it was, you know.
That's so funny. Bad.
It's kind of embarrassing, but you know, I loved it, you know, and the people liked it. So yeah, true story.
You paid
the pay to play in the game.
The game you played in.
And I still have not been reimbursed for that ever.
You got to get on the Eagles for that, man. They owe you $40.
Venmo this man $40 right now. I'll do it. Yeah. And I will Venmo you $40.
True story.
That's
incredible.
That is an incredible, incredible story.
Oh, so good. Wow. Okay. I said a couple of quick hitters. Okay. This is the last one.
Like I said, my wife and kids are back in.
And they're not here. You're like, we can chat all day.
Chat all day.
Okay. I just want to know, out of curiosity, the craziest thing that you have ever seen in an NFL game. And I think I know how you might answer based on one of your teammates.
Yeah.
But what is the craziest play you have seen, and what was your vantage point and reaction to it?
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of anything crazier than watching Saquon the whole year, first of all, get 2,000 yards. But yeah, him reverse hurdling a guy after making two guys miss, including my good teammate Devin Lloyd, and jumping over a guy backwards. When I tell you, it is so unique to the older you get in the league and the more, you know, all stars you've been around, the less starstruck you are. And there's nothing you haven't seen. When I tell you, our whole entire team, sometimes when we watch Saquon, you get that little kid feeling of when you're watching sports for the first time, or, you know, when you're watching your favorite athlete and you're just running around. It was like me watching Jimmer drop 52. Like literally I was running up and down the aisles at the Thomas and Mack Center, freaking out. That's how we are on the sideline. Watching Saquon. Yeah. So it's really cool to watch. And, you know, I've been fortunate to play with a few of some of the best players of all time, you know, Jason Kelce, Lane Johnson, Saquon Barkley. So I feel, you know, kind of like a fish discovering water last. One day I'll appreciate it, I think.
That was seriously. I mean, that was the Giants gifted you guys a Super Bowl. You know what I mean? I'm sitting over here and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. We give up Saquon. Obviously, you know, I don't know. I can't even justify it. He is an incredible athlete. It was that one sequence was amazing. But every time you watch him, like you said, he's really, really fun to watch. So what a cool thing. But yeah, you're welcome, Eagles fans. Gosh.
Okay. And then Britton, as I guess we make this official and close out. Once again, we thank you for your time as you are very much amidst the NFL season. I think everybody wants to know what you are expecting your role to be with the Eagles as you move forward. And maybe that's an impossible question to answer at this juncture.
Yeah, well, let's see. By the time this episode airs, so we play the Cowboys tomorrow night. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. By the time this episode airs, we will have played them, I'm sure. And people will have seen. So I wasn't elevated for the first game. It's funny because I'm trying to help out my replacement, essentially. Jahan Dotson is the one returning, and the coaches have asked if I will help him out a little bit, which is a funny thing to, you know, that's it what you do. That's my job. I'm gonna help out. Yeah. But he's gonna be great. But they have utmost confidence in me. They've brought me in and met with me, and they're like, look, at some point in the season, you definitely we're gonna need you as a returner, as a receiver. You know, I the games that Devontae was hurt last year, I started two games at receiver and did well. So it's nice, like I said, to be back where they know me. And at some point, and if we stay healthy the whole year and I'm just on practice squad, you know, I'm going to get Jahan ready for every punter like you've never seen. I'm going to give him the full scouting report. Just, you know, do do right by the team, do right by everybody. And so we'll see what happens. Unless someone just, this is the scary thing. If someone they're out in the league muffs a punt and they claim
you're getting
me.
Called.
I'm getting called. I'm going to have to move called. To Seattle. You know, yes, I don't know where I'm going to go.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
But so we'll hopefully I get to stay here and just be elevated to the active roster at some point. But we'll see what God has in store and what the football gods have in store, because they're more unpredictable.
They are.
Hey, guess what? In football terminology, I think we need to call an audible, because this is so good. We have at least one or two social media questions coming in for you.
Love it.
That I believe we need to ask you. We're going to do it in a segment we called Open Gym, where everybody can take their shot, Britton. And we're going to do it right after this break. So we'll call a timeout. And because Love Britton it. Is so kind and doesn't have his kids and wife with him.
Nothing to be through tonight.
He's going to come back and answer a few questions for us when From the Logo with Jimmer Fredette continues. Today's show is powered by Eddy, because good work deserves to be celebrated. Eddy makes HR simple so small businesses can focus on what really matters, their people.
From hiring and onboarding to payroll and culture, Eddy helps teams run smoothly and reminds us that behind every business, there's a story worth celebrating.
From the Logo continues, and it's time to open things up to our listeners and watchers, specifically your submitted questions from social media straight to our guests and or Jimmer. We call it Open Gym, where everybody can take their shot. So, Britton, first question, I'm going to dish off to Jimmer and let him present this brain buster for you, my friend.
Yeah, this is a good one. Also hurts a little bit. This is from at NB Touche. I'm sorry, I am not 100% sure how to pronounce it. NBTEUSCH. But he has a good question. So what is it like beating BYU, a team that you cheered for when you were younger? So one that hurts a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm 3-1 against BYU in my career. It's a good feeling, honestly. Like, I don't know how else to put it. It's a good feeling. I would say it's bittersweet, but when you're playing, it's not bittersweet, right? But like I said before, I still have so much love for BYU, and obviously Coach Satake. I mean, Bronco and I were super close too, but Coach Satake was the one who recruited me. You know, he went to my high school, and I just think the world of him, and they're doing a great job with that program. So Coach Roderick was my first offensive coordinator. So I just, you know, like I said, still got a lot of love for BYU. Jimmer knows I was the biggest BYU basketball fan, even more so than football, biggest BYU basketball fan in history. I was on the promo for, I'll show you guys the picture after, for when I was like 10 years old, that they would sell tickets on. It was me. Front row. Yeah.
That's
so. But you asked me one of these days, give me BYU basketball trivia 2004 to 2012. I'll give you all the, give me Balderson stats, Trent Place, any, whatever you need.
We're having you back on to do that.
Bruiser, you know?
Yeah. Just quick little tidbit here for me, like the BYU Utah. I grew up in New York, so I didn't know much about it. Right. It wasn't as big of a deal for me. I didn't watch BYU or Utah play when I was younger because they always played at like 10 p.m. And if it was on and out, you know, East Coast time, and I couldn't really watch it. So I didn't know much about it. My sister ended up going to BYU. She ended up marrying a guy that went to the University of Utah, and they were, you know, together. And my brother-in-law was a big U fan, and he sent tape to the University of Utah for me at that time. There wasn't social media. Right. So we couldn't, you know, so he's like, because BYU was following me at that point. And Brett was like, well, I'm going to send it, you know, to the University of Utah. So he sent tape over to the University of Utah, and they watched. But I will say, they did not offer me a scholarship. I will say, they did not offer me a scholarship. Just BYU did. So, you know, I understand it. You got offered by both and had to make the decision. Yeah, and then, yeah, ever since, I was like, all right, well, if that's going to be the case, we're going to have to do my thing.
I see that. And it really does. Yeah, it feels good. That Jason, for those that remember the Jason Shelley game, I know BYU fans listening, it's like, but man, that game was one of the loudest and funnest games I've ever been a part of. And love a good BYU-Utah rivalry. And
it's the best. It's the best.
Don't get twisted. I bleed red, but I
100%
definitely
as you should.
All right, next question for Britton Covey, Philadelphia Eagles receiver and returner, comes in from at Nick Barlow, who asks, have you thought about what you'd like to do after football, and what would that be?
Why do you think I'm trying to drag out this career for so long?
He's like, I have no idea. I wouldn't put my body into this if I knew what I was going to do.
Man. I mean, yeah, I've thought about it. I think something that I'm sure everyone goes through this, picking a career. The idea of kind of being pigeonholed into a career and picking a path and staying on that path, it just like scares me. And I don't know yet. Definitely thought of coaching. Coaches have made a huge impact in my life. I think it's something that I would really care about, be fulfilled by. I'm in the process of writing a little bit, you know, some of the stuff we talked about, classic, typical Covey. Oh my gosh, don't want to be like that. But I've done some writing and I don't know yet. That's a good question, Nick. If you have any thoughts, feel free to give them to me.
Listen,
if I do go work in the corporate world or something, to any, you know, let's just hope that there's some golf in there because I do enjoy golf.
Yes. Yes.
We'll get you over here at Tandem Ventures. Go
absolutely.
Ahead.
You know, like I promise you, that's what Taysom wants to do. If Taysom had his way, he would just golf 36 holes a day. I'm telling you.
Britton, it's simple. Just write a book on usage rate of guys like Logan Magnussen. And yes.
As they have to switch to the five. Real, you
yes,
know,
he
real,
did.
Yeah.
Logan at 6'5" was playing our five man in a Sweet 16 game against Florida.
Against Florida.
No, you know, that's and he was crushing it too.
Yeah, he was.
Shout out to Logan.
He was the center on a Sweet 16 team. Oh, that is fantastic. All right, Jimmer, one more, and then we'll let Britton get on his way.
Yes, we got last one here from at Air Gordon. Love the name. Besides the Super Bowl, what has been your favorite NFL place you have played at?
Ooh, favorite place I've played at.
Favorite arena.
There's some cool NFL stadiums for sure. What I would say is the best NFL stadiums are the ones that aren't dependent on if they're good or not. Because, for example, I've played at Detroit and they were really good, and so it was hopping, but I've heard that playing there when they're not good, it's just not, you know what I mean? And I think that's the case for quite a few places. My favorite one that I've played at, I would say probably the loudest one that I felt like was Seattle. I mean, that 12th man. That place is cool and they are loud and, it's rainy and it's not fun to be there, but man, they go all out and they weren't even that good. And I think that's what sticks out to you is when you play a team that's not that good and it's still like that. It's pretty cool.
That's cool. And they don't have a basketball team still. So they're still hanging on.
They are
football all in all. The Mariners, you get some love too, but they are football all in all with that. So that's really that's really cool to hear, though.
That's what's funny about playing, you know, in LA for a little. No one cares about football over there. It's so funny to go from Philly to LA. You know, nobody.
There's too
cares.
Much to do, Britton. There's too much There's to too- do. You can go to the beach every day. You can go. You know, you can do anything you want.
Jamie Foxx lived a few blocks away from me. I'm like, oh, who cares about me? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Like LA Rams, LA. You got two teams. You know what I mean? LA. They want USC more than anything.
Hey, to say that we have enjoyed this conversation would be a massive understatement, Britton. We wish the best of luck to you in your NFL ventures. When you are done playing football at some point, if you'd like to hop in the broadcasting forum with Jimmer and me. With arms wide open, my friend, you're always welcome on this pod and in our circles, but I'd see nothing but success for you in the future. And To close out, I'll say that we'll go ahead and offer up a GoFundMe for your parking reimbursement.
$40.
Raise
$40, guys.
$40.
Oh, thanks, guys. No, it's been a blast. Sure appreciate it.
Thanks for the time, brother.
Thanks, Britton.
All right. Our 3x3 update is next. GM Jimmer puts on his hat to tell us what the latest is in the push for gold in the Los Angeles Olympics in 3x3 basketball. This break is sponsored by Eddie, the HR software with a soul. We're not just building tools to manage people. We're helping businesses create workplaces where people feel seen, valued, and inspired.
Eddie is proud to support the stories on From the Logo because the stories we share celebrate the soul. Kyle Van Noy and his foundation supporting foster care, Jeremy Guthrie, who is constantly serving people in every aspect of his life. It just fits together because Eddie is about people and the everyday wins that make work meaningful.
From the Logo into the final quarter and brought to you by Eddie, the HR software built for small businesses who put people first. It is time for our USA Basketball 3x3 update. You know what time it is, Jimmer. It's GM Jimmer time. He's got the latest on the drive to gold in 2028. This is also a place where we include your weekly rule of the game to get more acclimated with one of the newest and fastest growing Olympic sports. Okay, GM Jim, let's do it. What's the rule? Or maybe you want to start somewhere else with this 3x3 update.
Yeah, so little update. We have the U23 World Cup that's coming out up here real soon. And it's in China. We're excited about that. We have a great group of guys. These are some of the younger guys that we bring in from college or just started their professional careers to play in these events. And they could be the future of 3x3 basketball, right? So we're looking at all these guys to see how they're doing and see how they perform on the biggest stage, right? This is the world championship. So you're playing against the best of the best all over the place. And this year we have, you know, four participants, Caden Pierce, Bryson Warren, TJ Clark and Alex Budge. And some of you may have heard these names before. Caden Pierce is an interesting one because he actually was the player of the year in the Ivy League last year for Princeton. And he, they don't have like NIL in at Ivy Leagues right
what?
Now.
What?
There's like a thing that's kind of like a truce where they just don't do a whole lot of NIL because they're obviously they're academics first. We understand that. They don't give out full athletic scholarships. This is just kind of the way that it's been. So Caden did an interesting thing that people may have seen in the news recently. He actually is going to sit out his senior year of basketball at Princeton. He is going to go and stay and play at Princeton, or he's going to go to school to Princeton at Princeton and finish up his degree, of course, because he wants to get a degree from Princeton. But then he is going to sit out the year and he's going to transfer somewhere else next year to play.
Wow.
Because he wants to get some NIL and he wants to play in a different school. So because of that, he's going to be able to take a fifth year and be able to transfer to another team. And he's going to get paid pretty well because he's a really good player, 6'7", strong, athletic, can really move. So obviously Ivy League player of the year, he obviously can play. So we're super excited. Bryson Warren, he played with the OTE team back in high school, super talented. TJ Clark just played with our U Nations 23 team that they had in Chile. They won that whole thing. TJ is a great defender, super athletic. And then there's Alex Fudge, another great athlete who played in the U23 World Championships last year, that took second. And he's going to be a great addition to this team. So I'm excited to watch this group. Hopefully they can win it, but it's fun to see some of these young guys getting into the sport. Okay. Now, rule of the day.
Let's get in the details. Let's go.
Clearing the basketball. Okay. So what this means is if you're playing your typical 3x3 basketball game at the park, right, when you're at your house and you're just kind of playing with your friends, you usually check the ball up. And you shoot, right? And you score. And if you score, there's not continuous play. So that what it means is you get the ball, and whether you play winners or losers, you go and you check the ball up again and you just keep playing. So in 3x3 basketball, it is not the case. You if you make or miss the shot, the other team gets the ball, whether if there's not an offensive rebound, if they get the rebound or if it scores, they get the ball. And then you have to clear the ball every single time beyond the 3-point arc. And it has to be both feet and the ball beyond the arc for it to be successfully cleared. So if you don't get that and you go and you try to score a basket, it doesn't count. You know, they call it off and they give the next team the ball. So you have to make sure that you get good at clearing, because you can play defense all the way up to that 3-point line. So like once you score a basket, you stand kind of like in that, like right outside that circle, and then you play defense, and you could play defense all the way out to the clearing. So you could take 3 or 4 seconds to get out to the 3-point line and clear the ball if you're not good at clearing it. And then you only have 8 seconds on the shot clock instead of 12 seconds, right? So being able to clear the ball quickly, fast, efficiently while they're playing defense on you is a skill, something that we try to work on a lot in 3x3 basketball. And so to make sure that you're, you know, prepared and getting into an action as quickly as possible. So it's an important thing, but it's a little thing that, you know, is a little bit different that you don't really see a whole lot in the game of basketball, except when you're playing in 3x3. So clearing the basketball is important, and it's not as easy as you think it is. Like, people are playing defense all the way and they're physical. They're trying to take that ball from you. If you don't think about it, they're going to come tap it from behind or steal the pass out, whatever it is. It's all live. So that's it for today.
Love it. The fast paced, continuous nature of the game makes it super fun to watch. Great stuff from GM Jimmer in his USA 3x3 update. Now we close with our final thoughts, perhaps a final shout out, whatever's on your mind, Jimmer. How would you like to close out this podcast?
Yeah, thanks to Britton, obviously, again, just an incredible guest. I had such a great time with him, just chatting with him. We wish him the best, right? He's with the Eagles right now. You know, he's on the practice squad, and we're excited to see him get called up, because he's going to get called up at some point. He's going to make a big play. He's going to have a great reception or a big punt return at some point. And we're excited for that. So, and thank you to all our listeners out there. We appreciate you. Continue to listen, subscribe, share it with your friends. We're excited about the reception we've had so far.
Yeah. And who knows where we'll see Britton playing. Hopefully the Eagles elevate him and hold on to him, because as he mentioned, maybe it'll be back with the LA Rams and Sean McVay. Really cool stuff. Let's just make sure that if he is playing either in LA or Philadelphia, he's got the appropriate parking pass.
Don't want that again.
I still can't believe he paid $40 to park.
That's so great.
At a game he played in. Oh, amazing stuff. Jimmer, great stuff, brother. Always fun to hang out. We'll do it again soon. A reminder to shoot your shot in life. We'll see you on the next episode.